the 10th episode of Tales for the East, a podcast series from Denniston, Sighthill and Hag Hill in Glasgow's East End. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Alistair Satchell and I'll be your host for this series. This episode is a conversation with Jackie Shearer of Denniston about her life and work. Jackie was brought up in Glasgow and East Kilbride and has had a long and fascinating career in the arts sphere. We talk about growing up in East Kilbride, the role of a good 80s jumble sale, the thriving music scene of the 80s, how Tom Leonard and Alistair Gray's work really connected with her as a young person, and then how she stepped into working in the arts. We also talk about comparisons between the East End in the past and present. And now, I'm delighted to hand you over to Jackie Shearer. Who are you?
My name's Jackie. I live in Denniston. I've lived here for, well, I've lived in this house for about 15 years, and prior to that, lived with my partner round the corner for maybe another 5 or so years. So I feel like I'm very much a kind of newer Dennistonian. So yeah, very much Jackie from Denniston.
Fantastic. Where are you from originally, Jackie?
Yep, so I was actually born in Derby, and my mum left my dad when my sister and I were super young, and I'm eternally grateful to her for doing that, because, you know, she brought us back to Scotland. No harm to my folks in down south, but you know, I must admit, I enjoy being Scottish. So really delighted that we got that start. And I just grew up in Glasgow, out off Paisley Road West, so kind of south side, like went to Hillington Primary School, kind of an old school in Glasgow, really lovely school, you know, when the girls and boys playgrounds were separated and all that stuff. And then when I went into first year at school, we all moved to East Kilbride, to Newtown. So I was the first year in a brand new school in East Kilbride, which was amazing, because it had great, you know, everything was amazing. Like, we had a theatre, we had a fantastic music department, we had a great PE department. It was the middle of the country, so when you went out for PE and you went for a run, you literally went for miles through the farmers' fields and all of that. I guess moving from Glasgow to East Kilbride was quite kind of, it's a bit of a culture shock, so I struggled, and I really wanted to come back to Glasgow, so I went to Glasgow Uni and, you know, moved back into Glasgow when I was about 18, 19 in student flats, and there we go.
What was it about Glasgow that made you miss it when you were younger then?
You know, when you move to a new town, it was so new. Where I grew up, you had, you know, there was a pavement on either side of the road and houses on either side of the road. So when you were wee, you kind of knew, you sort of knew how an area was planned, if you know what I mean. And then you moved to East Kilbride and there's no roads in the middle of anything, because it's all meant to be user-friendly and pavements and safe for kids, and all the houses, all the cars are kind of in another sort of area around lockups. So I just really struggled with that, I guess. You know, I did get used to it, and then I really enjoyed being at secondary school because it was a really well-resourced secondary school, probably way better than the equivalent I would have attended in Glasgow. I got into music just as a fan, and it was at the time where Aztec Camera had just released Highland Hard Rain, so, you know, it was hanging down the town centre trying to catch a glimpse of, you know, Roddy Freeman, Campbell Lowe as they, you know, came out, Impulse Records. So there was all that kind of stuff then. It was the Jesus and Mary Chain. So, you know, it was a kind of, it was a fun time to, like, be in East Kilbride as well. So I grew into it, but never, you know, that is never enough to kind of stay there, lot, stock and barrel, I guess, yeah.
It's amazing you bring up music straight away there. That's fantastic. Yeah, Jesus and the Mary Chain, that's, yeah, they're significant, as Aztec Camera as well. What was it about their music? Because they're both quite different. What was it about their music that really grabbed you?
Yep, so I guess with Aztec Camera, I mean, I loved, like, Postcards records, and I can't really remember what came first for me, but, you know, when you're a young teenager and you're beginning to become politicised as an individual, not about party politics, and so you're really getting to understand, you know, more about your own identity. There's a big, you know, it was in the early 80s, there was that push and pull with London, and if you wanted to do certain things, London was the place to go. My sister went to London, still lives in London, but I was always, you know, in that other camp, which is, why can't we have these things here? In a really personal way, because I also took English right through school to sixth year. And again, I feel really fortunate because so many things tied in together with that kind of your identity, the politics. So at the same time, I was getting into, you know, Aztec camera and postcard and all these kind of labels from Scotland and doing things from Scotland. I was learning about, you know, Tom Leonard and Alistair Gray, like Lanark was out and all these things. So it was just like a kind of magical kind of period, really, to be young and, you know, be wanting to kind of find out about, you know, an identity, a cultural, political identity at the personal level. But clearly it was more than that as well. So, yeah, if that makes sense.
It certainly does, yeah.
Tom Leonard was just like an absolute, you know, just like a bolt of lightning, you know, in terms of just what he was writing about and, you know, language and all of that stuff. And it just came at, you know, at the perfect age for me. So, yeah, and it just opens all these other doors to, you know, other interesting things to pursue as a young teenager.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was listening to, was it Radio 4 the other day? And I can't remember what it was they were talking about. Oh, it was In Our Time. It was on, and Des Dillon was on. And he was taking apart whatever it was, the sonnets. It was Shakespeare's sonnets. And it was just magical hearing him talk, because he was saying about, like, poetry, for it to mean something, now this is his take, I don't know if you know, there are many takes in it, but for it to mean something, it has to be written in the heat of the moment. And you could tell there were only one or two of the sonnets that were written in passion and heat, the rest are written in sort of critical engagement later on. And it was so interesting to hear him.
It's fabulous, again, you know, having that time to go back and read things as an adult, I find much more difficult. But, you know, when you are that young age, you know, from, I guess, 12, 13 through to your early 20s, you're just absorbing it all the time. You can't get enough of it. So I need to find space to do more of that.
Totally.
As I reach as I get to 60.
Ah, my goodness. Yeah. With the bands being around, did you see them live as well?
Yep, I did. So I think, where did I first see Aztec Camera? Probably in the Olympia ballroom, which was the big, you know, kind of civic space in East Kilbride where all the under 18s discos were. I think it was Orange Juice and Aztec Camera played there, you know, with the Black Uhuru. You know, there's just a kind of whole range of, you know, bonker stuff that someone just in East Kilbride liked bands and they would put them on. So definitely round about there. The Jesus Mary Chain. I just always remember, you know, seeing those guys around East Kilbride, you know, with the duffel coats and the big hair, and we were all, you know, everyone went to jumble sales, you know, so it's kind of like, oh my God, look, they're trying to find, you know, a new duffel coat at the jumble sale, and, you know, other people, we try to go, like, what are they buying? So, you know, it was at the time they were looking for a singer, I remember, and my sister went to audition, and, you know, in a community centre. Wow. I remember them saying, but do you like Cabaret Voltaire? Mm. You know, and we were kind of going, I think we know who they are. Yes, we like Cabaret Voltaire. So again, you know, just these little introductions kind of open up other opportunities here. No internet, trying to work out, you know, how are we going to listen to Cabaret Voltaire? And then, of course, you've got John Peel and, you know, all comes right and you somehow, you know, within like 24 hours, you know exactly who they are and what they're doing and what their back catalogue was. But I do still struggle thinking, how did we find that stuff out?
It was the British Virgin Book of Singles and Virgin Book of Albums that I had when I was a teenager.
Yeah, well, that'd be it, going to the library to work all this stuff out, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting a certain look, you would really have to work it out. Where are you going to, you know, get all these certain things? Mainly jumble sales, of course. But, But then, yeah, I saw Jesus and Mary Chain quite a lot, like from their early gigs in the Night Moves, I think. Was it Night Moves? All the way through to the Barrowlands. So, yeah, I do like them.
You came to Glasgow Uni to study. What did you study at Glasgow Uni?
Yeah, so I studied actually film and TV in English. You know, I'd actually worked really hard to get the grades to go to Glasgow to do film and TV and all that stuff, but when I got there, it just wasn't what I imagined. I have no idea what I imagined, and it's, again, I think only with 20 or 30 years hindsight, when you look back, you can see how under prepared you are for an experience like that when you come from, like, you know, a kind of council house in Greenhills. So I kind of feel like I didn't really grab all the opportunities that I could have at uni just from being like a wee bit more ill prepared. So I changed the subjects basically once I got to second year, and I didn't do particularly well in English or film and TV, but at Glasgow you could take a third subject and I took Scottish history. So
lovely.
I ended up doing my honours in Scottish and modern European history, which was fantastic. So yeah, that's what I ended up doing, which I never imagined a million years.
Who were your tutors on the course that stick out for you?
There's a guy called Duncan McInnes, and he came from Lochaber. He really stuck out because he was he just felt really, really working class, to be honest. He stuck out because he just seemed really normal. And it was so long ago, can't really remember anyone else, to be honest. But yeah, he was a standout. Like, he was like, you know, one of your good teachers at school that you remember. It's funny. There's a lot of, I guess, in film and TV, there's a lot of people there who come from families who have careers in film and TV. So, you know, it's kind of following in the family tradition. Was I had no idea about any of that stuff. So, you know, but yeah, so obviously delighted I came out the other end, but you know, a 2-1. So I was like, yeah, job done. What's next?
So what was next? Where did you go after university?
Yes, what did I do? So always really loved the arts. So music was a great opportunity for me and my pal. Like, we used to walk to Night Moves from East Kilbride when we were about 14, 15 to go to Night Moves. Wow. We'd save the bus fare. It was like a 12-mile trip there and a 12-mile trip back.
Wow.
And then they did put on the all-night buses in East Kilbride. So that was like really brilliant because we'd save our money to get into the gig and we'd get the late-night bus back. But yeah, we were really obsessed. So we'd be going to Night Moves 2 or 3 times a week to see whatever it was that was on. So, you know, music was always just a massive part of just day-to-day, you know, kind of living as a teenager. But also in and amongst that, because as you'll know yourself, music opens doors. So, you know, whether it's someone like David Bowie and you get introduced to all the things they like, and it takes you to, you know, other artists and all of that kind of thing. So I really, you know, started to really like art, and not in a kind of way of going to the museum and the art galleries to see the old masters, just much more contemporary stuff. Yeah. A lot of photography, a lot of like the 80s New York women artists, like Barbara Kruger and Cindy Sherman, and all of that stuff got, you know, was really interested in feminism. And so it's just a great time to be young, to be honest, the 80s, for, you know, just kind of opening up a lot of new ways of looking at the world and thinking about the world. So still doing all that when I was at uni, and then I became unemployed when I finished uni, of course, or went into Raylands, the classic thing to do. You finish uni in the 80s, and it was 1990 I graduated, and then went on a month around Europe, and then was unemployed like most people in those days, where, you know, you sign on. And probably, I think I signed on for about 6 or 9 months, but there was a lot of like government training programs. So I got onto one which was called Reco Meco, which was run by CSV Media, which is kind of really big work training program for people who've been unemployed for a number of months. And it's an arts admin training program called Reco Meco. And that was just brilliant. So that was 6 months of arts administration training, working with a lot of, it was a women's, it was women only. It was women of all backgrounds, all ages. It was just absolutely fantastic. And part of it, you had to find your own placement. So I was kind of thinking, God, you know, what am I going to do here? And I was, you know, it was those days where you're always looking for a job. So I think the Herald on a Friday had a whole job supplement. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day then, now you can have, I don't think any newspaper's got jobs in it. And I remember seeing a job for the director of a new photography festival that was going to be happening in Scotland called Photofish. I kind of phoned up and got gist of the process for the director. Not that I was going for the director's job, of course, but I wanted to wait until they'd appointed a director and roughly knew when that was. And then when the guy was in place, I phoned him up and asked for a placement. So, which I duly got.
Amazing.
And then they kept me on. I was there for about 5 or 6 years, like kind of going across Scotland, putting on photography festivals by mega international artists. So it was like, wow. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. So yeah, it was just an amazing opportunity. And again, you know, I always say that to folk, you know, you've just got to be so active looking for your opportunity.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't have a director at the point at that time, but knowing that they were going to have one. So I was just biding my time and, you know, very prepared to work for nothing. And it was down in Leith as well. So I was taking the bus from Glasgow to Leith.
Wow.
You know, and all that stuff. But yeah, so there we go. That was just utterly fantastic.
Of that period, which artists that you exhibited stand out for you? Which ones were the ones that had the most impact on you personally?
I mean, there's people like Wolfgang Tillmans, who's like a big artist now, and he's very contemporary and, you know, kind of young and documenting, you know, his kind of peer group and all of that. So I always loved that. But I guess some of the lesser known photographers, people like the German photographer called Joachim Schmidt, who collected found photographs. So he collected all these found photographs over, you know, a period of years, and the way he kind of laid them out and documented them and exhibited them was just really beautiful. So it was just lovely stories from all these lost photographs and just ordered in a really lovely way. So folk like that, another Luis Gonzalez Palma was a kind of South American artist making massive large-scale work. You know, just think really beautiful photographs that kind of work that I would never have been introduced to before. Yep, so there's crazy stuff. Kane Caravan, who was a fire artist, and he had a big fire project, you know, on the beach at Aberdeen. You know, so there's kind of, we had a big fax performance, because BT had sponsored the festival on the technology front, and up in Inverness we had a kind of all-night event called the Six Continent Fax Performance. And basically BT had absolutely brought in all this technology, and it was like tons of cable and all that kind of thing, to create on the banks of the Cromarty Firth in this old barn, to kind of create this, make this high-tech environment whereby artists could fax images all night. But it was like really lively. It was a bit like a kind of club event, but back in the day. And it was just full on. People, you know, had drinks. It was social, but it was all, you know, artists were kind of bouncing off each other. You know, when I think back now, it's like, wow, you know, Alistair Foster was the director, and he did have like really out there amazing ideas. So, you know, that was all these things are down to him. But yeah, so that was a pretty great experience. And then there's people like Pedro Almodovar, who was a big kind of technology based sort of photographer. And he came over and had a big show. And I think that was up in Aberdeen as well. And I just remember, you know, it wasn't high maintenance, but, you know, just, you know, the kind of standards were up here, and rightly so. But we were all so busy, and it got a wee bit, you know, kind of stroppy, I guess. And I said, I'm doing everything I can. You know, it's going to take me the time it's going to take me. That's all I can say. I remember I'm just going, ah, well, you know, that's fine. You know, I get that totally. That's fine. If the time you need, the time you need. Away you go and do it. So, you know, there's just, lots of great stories, lots of brilliant moments. The guy from Albuquerque as well, who does Joe Witkin. So, yeah, just loads of great, great memories, to be honest.
Where did you go after working with the photography projects? Where was the next thing?
Where did I go? Yeah, I went to Stirling Council, actually. I was the arts officer in Stirling Council. And then I worked with like an amazing manager there, Jane Spears, who's actually the chief exec of Aberdeen Performing Arts now. You know, she was just quite, you know, ambitious in terms of the area of Stirling and wanting to, you know, create like a really great environment for people. So she was the manager of the cultural services. I was an arts officer. And under her kind of leadership, we raised quite a lot of money to develop the toll booth. So I was heavily involved in that and running that early doors, and set up all kinds of music things there because Stirling was so easy to get to. So we had this kind of international experimental music festival. We're trying to create this portfolio of, you know, cultural offerings, I guess, and for local people and for people out with the area, because it was so easy to get to. So that was all great, brilliant, loved it. That was a good few years, 6 or 7 years, and then went to Easterhouse, actually. I think I went straight to Easterhouse from there, where, again, involved in another capital development with the bridge and running the arts company that was at the heart of the bridge complex in Easterhouse, and that was absolutely fantastic. So there for about 13, 14 years. Yeah, and then went off to do a few odd smaller things, like, well, not smaller things, but shorter term projects. Like, I went to the Beacon to help the board there develop their kind of community engagement and audience development. So done that for 2 or 3 years. Then what happened? They went over to Rossi and went part time because my mum needed to, like, kind of pretty much full time care. So I just wanted to go part time and you know, just concentrate my efforts on my mum. So that was the last sort of 16 years.
Zoom.
Yeah, where do they all go? Where do they all go?
What you're talking about there is really interesting because these are organisations which are embedded in their community. These are organisations which have a real significant relationship to their community. What do you think community and the arts means to you? I know that's a very big question, sorry.
Yeah, I know. I think it's just that I think communities should have all things in a community. I think, you know, for someone like myself and how I grew up and where I grew up, it was people who were artistic and creative that allowed me to develop my identity and all of that. So it's a kind of intrinsic part of me that within a community, you need to have access to something that allows you to creatively grow, because, and it's not just about growing to become an artist or a designer or a, you know, an instrument of the arts. It's actually just about kind of nourishing you and helping you to develop in, you know, your own identity. And I know for me, you know, certainly no hardships, but, you know, I grew up in a, you know, single parent family, and I guess at that time you didn't see many of them about. But, you know, when you looked into the world of Nan Golden or something like that, you know, you were absolutely part of a much bigger community of interest, if you like. So I think it's just, I just feel really strongly that all communities should have the same access to resource. And it's just not fair that some areas don't. And that's just about a postcode. It's about a part of town in Victorian times, or, you know, hundreds of years ago, it was the way the wind blew, you know, because, you know, the poor people lived in the smelly part of town and the fancy people lived up the hill or in the West End, just because the way the winds blow. So, you know, and it's just not right that young people in particular don't have the same access to resource that other people do, whether it's in a city, in a village, you know, in a country. It's just not right. And, you know, think about people, you know, obviously right now, Marcus Rashford and those other young footballers, and what tremendous, tremendous young men they are. Just constantly just gives me goosebumps.
They are amazing. Really, Saka being 19 years old as well is just incredible. But what Marcus Rashford's done for food, for young people and families and needs a food bank, it's just unbelievable. There's so few other people that have done such things.
He's actually he's number one in the Sunday Times giving list of 2021. And the person's number two is Lord Sainsbury.
Goodness me.
And number 13 is Tom Hunter.
Gosh.
So that shows the level of giving that Marcus Rashford's done to hit that 2021 number one spot. And it's all in community and poverty.
Amazing.
Food, I think food distribution and community were the two themes.
Amazing. No, a truly brilliant guy.
And it's just, it is. And it's just not, it's just so wrong that, you know, so some folks are not getting access to the same resources as others. Schools in Glasgow, you know, they're all public schools, but people will move from my area to go to another area in order to get their kids into that school. How come? How is that? When it's not a private school, it's a public school. So I don't get it, why they're all not resourced in the same way.
It's a vital, vital question. I don't have the answer.
No, I don't either. But these are the rhetorical questions that I ask myself. And I guess, like, you asked the question about the arts and communities, and it's you just try to you know, create some kind of, you know, equity, if not equality, in terms of an offer or a resource to people who live in nearby, but also realising that people from out west do want to come and see or do different things. So it's not all one or the other, but I think primarily just giving access to resource.
A healthy mix. Yeah, definitely. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talked there about the geography of the cities and the kind of the smelly wind. And that, thinking about the layout of Glasgow then, what did the east end of town mean to you when you were a kid?
Well, when I was a kid and I grew up in Glasgow from my primary school years, we lived south of the river, so I didn't really know this area too well. And it was only when we moved to East Kilbride and I started to get the bus back to my granny's, because I had to come right into town and then get the bus out again. And the bus went up, it came through Bridgeton Cross and it went up Abercrombie Street. And Abercrombie Street had the abattoir on it when it was a working abattoir. So you'd see all the animals like march in and stuff like that. And obviously the smell, and every time you got near it, put something over your nose, all that kind of stuff. But also, it was such a, you know, just such an incredibly sort of vibrant area for all sorts of reasons. So you come through Bridgeton Cross, you know, and there'd be all kinds of like red, white and blue bunting. I'd say no more about that. Then you come up Abercrombie Street and there'd just be all this cattle going to get slaughtered. It's really smelly. You get a glimpse up Duke Street as it turns, because when it came up Abercrombie Street, you turn left to go into town. But you get a glimpse right where you see some really nice shops, because there's a furrier kind of quite close to the corner. So I always remembered that. But as it turned, you had the old Duke Street Hospital on the right-hand side, and that was all men in pyjamas, like standing outside having a fag. You know, so there, and then it would go on past the Great Eastern Hotel when it was the hostel for like what I kind of call like old-fashioned tramps. It, and literally, like, you know, it was men who had overcoats with string, big beards. And I remember once my pal told me a story about when he was a wee boy and his granny took him, was walking past the Great Eastern or something like that, and he said, "Granny, what's that?" 'Cause he couldn't really make it out. There was an old man with a big woolen coat and a bit of string. And she said to him, "Oh, that's a tramp, son." And he's like, "What's a tramp?" And she said, "It's a man whose wife's left him."
Wow.
So there's just, you know, and there's something really sad and poignant about that. I mean, it is going back into the old
cultural perception. Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, you know, there's just a lot of, like, you know, alcohol, definitely, for sure, because it would all have been probably come to the East End, you know, decades before for work, and maybe migrants working and not really having family support if the work ran dry or whatever. So now I can, you know, you can see a story, because the East End's like rich for all of that, especially around Denniston, around, because the Great Eastern Hotel used to be just like a kind of residence for people who came to work in the mills.
Yeah.
So you get a sense of all of that. But, you know, certainly when I was getting on the bus from East Kilbride coming into town, it was just it was absolutely full of just, you know, characters, colour, like, oh my goodness, you know, what is going on here? What is that? Who's that? Why? How come? You know, it always just piqued my interest from that point. And then, well, I guess I like, particularly, you know, met Stephen, and then he was already living in Denniston. He's from Liverpool.
All right.
And he's been about 30 years in Glasgow now. So he moved up and worked and bought a flat in Denniston. So that was probably about 25 years ago or something. So, yeah. So, been here ever since. Love it, because it's got a great history. It's got a great combination of people who live and work here. It's got a great history and heritage. So close to town. You know, a lot of people talked about the gentrification of Denniston. It will never happen if you want such a thing to happen. But actually, I would probably say 2014 was quite a tipping point, certainly in terms of what I noticed. And that's where, you know, Redmond's and, I mean, Papa had been here a wee bit before, but Redmond's, I think, was a game changer. and the students support Strathclyde Uni. Don't know what happened to change it, but a lot more students came to Lithen. And it probably was that perception around 2014 in the Commonwealth Games, mm-hmm. and just making it more accessible. 10-minute walk from Glasgow Uni, Strathclyde Uni. So all those reasons, I think.
And can you describe for us, like, for the, say, listener who's listening has not been to Deniston, mm-hmm. Can you describe your street for us and the houses in your street? What do they look like?
Yeah, well, I actually live in quite a posh part of Deniston, so I live in the conservation area, and I live in a row of terraced Victorian houses from about 1850 and 1850, and the row's B-listed, and it was built by the Church of Scotland.
Oh, wow.
And its original name was called Reverend's Row. And it's got, like, the most amazing kind of architectural details, like, all the way through the house, but also out onto the wrought iron gates and kind of detail. But every house is slightly different. So although thematically they're all the same, every house is slightly different. So really, really nicely designed. So, yeah, it's a really great part of Deniston. And Stephen and I, we live down the corner in classic tenement because, you know, Deniston's full of just really beautiful classic tenements. And then we moved to Charing Cross Mansions for 4 years, and that was like a massive flat on the top floor, but it was like living in a museum because that was A-listed. And, you know, it was phenomenal, but it was like, you know, there was virtually nothing you could do to change the look and feel of where you lived because it was all so restricted. Anyway, we always kind of hankered to come back, and we did after like 4 years. So, long answer to a short question. The road I'm on is just a really lovely, lovely part of the conservation area.
Well, to dig slightly deeper into that response then, you hankered to come back from Charing Cross to Deniston. So what was it you were missing in the East End?
Yep. So I think, you know, just that lovely balance of, I mean, it is community, but I guess what I mean is that what I really like about it here is just such a mix of people. There's people from all walks of life. And so you're not, you know, I find it too stifling if you are in one area where it's all people that look like you. I mean, Charing Cross was a little bit unusual because it's probably just still technically within Garnet Hill, mm-hmm. but it was also in the bottom of Sucky Hall Street at a time when big bars were getting planning approvals for, you know, 3,000 capacity sports joints and all that kind of thing. So it did get a bit extreme living at that end of town, although that wasn't, you know, it wasn't the reason I wanted to come back. But just, I think that you do miss, there is a lovely community here. My neighbours are great. The wider community's great. You know, you can go into any baker's bar, and you always get, you know, a good blather with someone. You know, I have to say Reddins, again, really are standout in terms of customer care, if you like, and their customer service. So they've been brilliant at really developing a kind of extended sense of community in and around the bar, just because they had really great levels of service. So, yeah, I think I just really do like the mix of people. It's really is all walks of life, and that's good.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It was just lovely to catch up with you after all this time. Now, if anyone wants to hear an extra 5 minutes of Jackie and myself talking about the role of David Bowie in our lives and how we love him, do please feel free to drop me a line and I'll put it out on the podcast feed as a wee bonus episode. Jackie's tale of going to see Bowie's Berlin haunts, coincidentally in the week that he died, is really touching. Tales for the East is an artist-in-residence project from Glasgow Life. I share the position with my mate Tim Marozzo, who's been taking photo portraits of all the participants. If you know someone who has tales of Deniston, Sighthill or Haghill, and you think they'd be willing to talk to us for the podcast, we would love to hear from them. I'd also like to speak to anyone from the diverse immigrant communities in the area, so please do drop us a line on info@tales-fay-the-east.com with any contacts you think who would be willing to talk. Or if you just want to catch up with us on a social media type basis, please feel free to type in Tales for the East into your social media provider and you should find us there. Our website, tales-fay-the-east.com, gives you some more info about the project and provides links to subjects covered in the episodes. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to sharing more tales with you again soon. Bo and tang. Mimi Rishchev. See you again. Tatty bye.